time for a special Sunday morning edition of Community Forum. And we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning, Pete Knutson and Jeb Wyman. Pete Knutson teaches anthropology at Seattle Central Community College, and Jeb Wyman teaches English at Seattle Central Community College. And they're both in to talk about proposed restrictions on free speech and the gutting of programs at Seattle Central Community College. Pete and Jeb, thank you very much for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
Thanks, Mike, for opening up your studio once again to the community out here.
Yes, good morning, Mike. Thanks for having us.
So start out and tell us about these proposed restrictions and when you first heard about them.
Jeb, why don't you go ahead?
Well, this came out really last week with the first hearing that the district held. This is a revision to a WAC code. And it is, as Pete, you're going to read some sections that are stricken later on, removing constitutional protections on First Amendment expression on campus, and restricting political expression and First Amendment expression to what's a tiny portion of the campus at certain times, limiting the size of signs and a number of other details we'll talk about. It's brand new. And clearly the district was hoping that last week's meeting would not have been attended by quite so many people. It was, I think they were trying to make this a pretty quiet affair. Fortunately, we're starting to get the word out on it.
So it's interesting. The Washington Administrative Code can be changed without a action of the legislature. It can just be changed essentially by a procedure where you publish the bureaucracy in question, whether it's Port of Seattle or the Community College District. They publish proposed changes, and then it has to go through a due process public hearing format. And someone drafted these restrictions on free speech in affiliation with the Community College District after the Occupy encampment within the last 2 months. We don't know exactly who initiated this or where it came from. There's been a lot of evidence that there's been some national coordination in terms of the response to Occupy. This proposed code of conduct for the Seattle Central Community College, or all the community colleges, is patterned on a code which was developed in Kansas at Wichita State. And so that's what they're taking as their model, or you know, the educational policies being developed in places like Kansas, and I mean, who knows, maybe we'll have Texas textbook standards next, which concerns me because, of course, I teach about Darwin and evolution. But let me just give you some specifics that the district is proposing to repeal. This is what's currently in the administrative code that protects free speech on the Seattle Central campus, and let me read. The right of peaceful dissent within the college community shall be preserved. That's current policy. That is being stricken by this policy. That is being taken out. Let me read you another sentence that's being taken out of the policy. Orderly picketing and other forms of peaceful dissent are protected activities on and about the college premises. That is being repealed. That's being stricken. I'll read you another one. Peaceful picketing and other orderly demonstrations are permitted in public areas and other places set aside for public meetings in college buildings. That's being repealed. So what's being proposed here is a major restriction of First Amendment activities on a college campus. I mean, a college campus is a place where you want to bring education and enlightenment to your general population. It's a place where you want challenging politics. If you don't have challenging politics on a college campus, you don't have challenging education. There's always a relationship between questioning fundamentals in your society and going back and reading the classics that ask the basic questions about human existence. And so if we're now going to turn our community colleges into factories for basically a production of drone workers who have not been exposed to the big political questions and the big philosophical questions, that doesn't bode very well for our society.
Yeah, and I would say even broader than characterizing that as political speeches is simply ideas. And kind of in my delusional idealism, I think that the greatest bastion of expression and rights to expression should be college campuses and institutions of higher learning. And even further, I have liked to think that Seattle Central, maybe above all others in this region or certainly in this city, should be a defender of the right to the marketplace of ideas, and that's obviously one of the foundation stones of higher education, what an education is about. And this is certainly you read the language that's being stricken, Pete, and it's being replaced by clauses that such as this: non-college group events shall not last longer than 5 hours from beginning to end, and that is only during the times of 7 a.m. to 10 p.m., any political or otherwise First Amendment expressions permitted. They're delineated an area of the campus where this is going to be permitted for non-college groups or community groups, that would refer to.
Or potentially students who are not members of administrative sanctioned groups.
That's language can be read that way. And I took the liberty of swinging by the campus on the way to the studio this morning. So reading the language in this proposed WAC, kind of generously, it seems to be 391 square feet of permitted area, which seems to be about 5/100ths of 1%.
The terminology that they use for this, they call it in the proposed WAC a, quote, limited public forum area. That's what it's referred to. I mean, it's sort of analogous to what's happening in terms of global demonstrations in the, well, demonstrations in the United States where they have, like, you set up a fence, and inside the fence, that's your free speech zone. I mean, essentially, when you set up a limited public forum area where the First Amendment applies, what you're actually saying is that for 99% of the campus, the First Amendment does not apply. That's what you're actually saying.
It's actually greater than 99%, yeah. As it turns out.
Yeah.
Significantly less than 1%. That's using the figure of 15 acres for Seattle Central. And this covers SVI, Seattle Vocational Institute, and Seattle Central campus. We want to talk about Occupy at all, Pete?
Sure. There's just a couple more things I'd like to clarify in this new policy.
Yeah.
And as Jeb pointed out, it essentially drives a wedge between what they call college groups, which are employees, students, and also recognized campus groups recognized by the administration. We do not have a student government at Seattle Central. They eliminated the right of students to vote for a student government probably about 6 or 7 years ago. Yeah, that's correct. We do not have a student government at Seattle Central. It is run administratively.
So the administration decides what groups then are
exactly
okay to be on campus.
Exactly. You know, in fact, now this is a little digression, but this policy, to me, having taught there since 1989, kind of is the summation of a bunch of developments that have been happening at Seattle Central that have been pushing against free expression since the WTO, I think probably since a reaction to the WTO. For example, eliminating the right to vote for their student body officers, eliminating the college student newspaper, tearing down artwork by some of the art instructors that was deemed to be not appropriate. And now, of course, we've got the licensing policy for student organizations. They have to be administratively approved. And also, we've got basically the stripping out of many of the creative departments at Seattle Central, such as drama, basically eliminated. Journalism, Jeb was the advisor for the group. There's no journalism class. I mean, I guess the free press is not a citizenship. Free press, that's not a high priority in terms of education anymore. Film and video, award-winning program, with fantastic work coming out of there, eliminated. Even child care for students eliminated. And so we're looking at this whole trajectory. There was an attempt also to ban a anti-war group called Students Against War about 5 years ago. So we've just been in this mode ever since the WTO. And I When you go back to the World Trade Organization demonstrations, Seattle Central was at its peak, I think, creatively. It was actually the epicenter for the global protest, the community protest against the corporatization of the world, basically. And the protesters were proven subsequently to be right. Look at the meltdown we've had. They were right. And Seattle Central was right at the epicenter. The administration we had at that time under President Charles Mitchell was sensitive enough to the whole situation that it allowed full and free expression organization to go on that campus. And there wasn't a single window or item of property that was damaged. And I think, and actually it raised the profile of Seattle Central nationally to the point at which the following year, Time Magazine basically cited Seattle Central as one of the top five undergraduate programs in the United States. And the reason for that was that they came to the campus, they saw the dynamism. As I said before, challenging politics makes for challenging education. They saw the diversity. It was rather amazing. And unfortunately, since that high moment at Seattle Central, we've gone in this opposite direction. More control, less creativity. And of course, now we have this policy. And the one thing I'd like to say about the policy, to get back off my digression here, is that it drives a wedge between the community, who are referred to as non-college groups in this policy, and the people attending school. And I think it's important to remember that Seattle Central was born out of struggle in the Central District for higher ed for minority communities. It was born out of sit-ins by the Asian community in 1971. I mean, Seattle Central was given birth by the community. And so now we have a policy which is going to deny all that history and cut the community off from the community college. This is really wrong-headed.
Yeah, you know, I'd just go a little further with that idea, Pete, and the sequestering or quarantining expression to this little area is, to me, a real way of marginalizing, turning them into an exhibit, turning protest or expression into something to be kind of enjoyed or entertained by, rather than to participate in. And when you see that area, that's precisely the effect it would have, standing around the big sculpture there. And it's a, honestly, it's a pretty sad, denial of the heritage of the school. And the school's DNA has really shifted in the last 10 years in a way that's, personally saddening to me, since I'm pretty invested in the school, my history and my faith and belief in the school.
And aren't the restrictions even greater than that? Besides just the limited 391 square feet we would be allowed, it's also sign limitations, noise limitations.
Yeah.
Did they put limitations on the number of people allowed into that for, you know, fire safety
reasons? You know, that isn't in there, but I was thinking at that hearing meeting, it would be hard pressed to jam all the folks that were at that hearing into that space. Size limitations. No sign can be larger than 5 feet by 3 feet.
No individual can carry more than one sign. So if you have a button and a sign, you could potentially be cited under this policy.
There's a clause in here that if you are a non-college group, it's a little vague. If you're using college buildings or athletic fields, and we don't have athletic fields, later in it refers to facilities, but you need to post a bond. Obviously, that's a little difficult for most demonstrations to come up with a cash bond.
And the procedures for who has to post a bond are not clear. It just says it may be required. And so it leaves a lot of discretion to an administrator to determine, well, this group, okay, we'll let them go. This group, well, you know, I think you guys might want to post a bond. I mean, there's a lot of discretion in here.
If you go outside the accepted area for free speech, outside the free speech zone, or are quote-unquote disruptive, you can be trespassed from the college property, And you can appeal that, but only one person whose decision is final will hear that appeal, and that's the head of security at the college. So your chances of on that appeal are a little dim, it would seem.
And I believe they're asking people to give 24-hour notice for any events.
I think at some point it says encourage. At other point, there's some requirements in here in terms of advance notice.
Yeah, non-college groups is no less than 24 hours advance notice. Yeah. Obviously, when big news does happen and an action happens, there isn't 24 hours of notice. I assume that's in there so they can have the appropriate security assembled. I was just talking with somebody who said anytime there's an Occupy event at Washington, at UW, they're really amazed at how much security is there. It's overwhelming force is the new police paradigm.
That actually brings up an interesting question. So are these laws comparable, the proposed laws, comparable to other universities here in Washington State? What is the UW do?
I don't think, maybe with the exception of Evergreen, that there's any other higher ed institution that has sort of the density of free expression that Seattle Central has. And so, you know, maybe administrators don't feel like they've had to deal with, the same level of intensity of student expression. I mean, I think part of the reason for that, and I've talked to a lot of my UW prof friends, is that, we're dealing with a different class of student at a community college. We are dealing with students who are economically stressed. I mean, I have students that are sleeping under bridges. I have students that are moving their car every night in Ballard, trying to find a place to sleep where they're not going to be harassed. I have students who cannot afford to buy books. We typically have students that are deeply in debt in terms of student debt, which is a big growth market for the banks. These students are under enormous pressure. This is not like a lot of the four-year places where, granted, those students are having issues too and they've got debt issues, but many of those students do not have to work and go to school. I mean, our students are trying to cobble together a living. They're trying to get one foot up. And so when a movement like Occupy erupts, It's almost speaking to them directly. And I think our trustees who run this community college, who are appointed by the governor, they need to understand the condition of our students and why Occupy gave such expression to those concerns. I don't think they really have an on-the-ground understanding of what's going on or why this resonates. And so because Seattle Central has had this history of free expression, and it's got this working class, very diverse. There's no majority there racially. It's a place that's full of ferment, and I think that's one of the reasons why this policy has been that there's some people who are afraid of that ferment. They're afraid of that democratic chaos, and I think that's where this policy comes from, is that fear. Which is unfortunate because that's what America's about, right? It's democracy. Democracy is a messy process. And if you don't like a messy process, then what do you opt for? Rule by military? I mean, that's the option.
Yeah, I'd just make one other point here. These new rules are a solution without a problem. There hasn't been a problem of clashes on campus. Occupy was not an event where there were clashes or difficulties. There was a lot of propaganda that went into the media regarding sanitation, rats, needles, $20,000 a week, all of which really is false. And I hope that comes out in the media at some point as being false. So there isn't a problem to address. This is an attempt by bureaucrats to thwart off what they think may be a future threat. And I'm going to add one other thing. You asked about other universities that have this. So there are a few others around the campus, around the country. We mentioned Wichita State University. Pete mentioned that's a place, 2005, they had to have a week-long debate on whether to teach evolution in the state public school system, a place where they shut down their campus newspaper, and Wichita, the only abortion provider in that city of 400 was gunned down in 2009. It's a very conservative place. So this is where Seattle Central is drawing its model language from. Other universities, one that I do know of is University of Cincinnati. And in February, February 22nd actually, a suit was filed against the university for infringement of the First Amendment. And that is the inevitable result here of these rules. Board of Trustees, I would bet that they're going to pass them. This is my understanding and observation of how they work. A gutsy protester is going to step outside the free zone or maybe carry a sign that is 6 feet by 4 feet, fully 12 inches over the legal limit. And this will go into the court system, as it should. That's the system. And as a result, the district, complains endlessly about being strapped for money, to some degree rightfully, is going to spend how many thousands, tens of thousands of dollars, defending a needless statute. For what purpose? The exercise is pretty senseless to me.
Well, I'm just disappointed that, the administrators and the trustees do not really appreciate what makes Seattle Central unique. I mean, in terms of its history, in terms of its national prominence, and in terms of what we've done on very limited resources. I mean, we get, I think it's about half the state funding per student that the University of Washington gets, and yet we're open access, and yet when our students go to the UW, they do as well or better than the students who go through a highly selective process at the UW and enter as freshmen. I mean, this has been a really successful educational institution, and I feel very connected to it. I've invested a lot of my life in it, and I really hate to see us putting our energies into having to defend what makes this place unique.
Yeah, the place is special. I've been there personally since 1994, and Pete, you've been there a few years longer. And it has a character, and the energy derives from the students. They are remarkable individuals, a lot of whom have spent a lot of years in the School of Life and come with amazing stories. And they have dreams that they're following. That might sound a little corny, but it's really very true. And I feel really lucky to get to work there. Which is why I feel the same way you do, Pete. I just am sad that we've had this latest effort to quell the spirit of this place. As you mentioned, I was the advisor to the paper 2003-2008, and that was stamped out because several administrators did not like reading news stories that were embarrassing to themselves and to the school. It was just that simple, and it was pretty heartbreaking. Well, we have a little guerrilla student journalism outfit going. Can I plug them, Mike?
Yeah, sure. Certainly.
Yeah. New City Collegian is a small group of student journalists. And actually, if the listeners out there wanted to follow this issue, that's probably going to be a good source, maybe your best source of information, www.newcitycollegian.com. Anyway, that's where I would send folks if they want to follow this issue. Fortunately, we've had Catherine Long of Seattle Times has also written some on this, and we appreciate Mike having us here so we can continue to spread the word.
Yeah. So I just want to reiterate here. So a week or so back, this meeting occurs, this hearing occurs with minimal notice, and these changes to free speech are being proposed to be incorporated into Washington state law. We don't know by who. Is there no way we can trace back who wrote these?
You know, we have a great public disclosure law in Washington state, but they do have some exemptions in terms of legal preparations and consultations with lawyers. It would be worth filing a public disclosure request to see if there'd been any communication with, you know, people outside the state or whoever precipitated this. That'd be worthwhile doing. I don't know how much you would get, but you might Find some insight.
And then it's going to go to another hearing coming up this next Thursday.
Correct. April 5th, Thursday, 3 p.m., I believe.
3 p.m.
In the main building at Seattle Central. I don't know what room it is.
Well, I think there's an effort to get a larger space, but I think right now it is still at the Siegel Center boardroom, 1500 Harvard. It's a corner of Pike and Harvard.
First floor there at 1500.
You know, and I would encourage anybody in the community to come to this because this is a community issue and this is public education.
But the decision will not be made there. Is that correct? It then goes to before the Board of Trustees who, Pete, I think you said are selected by the governor?
The governor selects the Board of Trustees.
And how many people are on that? I have a sense for that. Is it just for a board of trustees for the community colleges?
For the Seattle Community College District, which includes Seattle Central, North Seattle, and South Seattle Community College.
Right.
SVI, Maritime Academy, Wood Construction also.
And are the board meetings, are those open to the public?
Yes, they are. And April 12th, Thursday at 3 o'clock, 1500 Harvard, is the first hearing, as they call it, of this new proposed WAC. May, what was that date?
In May, anyways.
The following subsequent board meeting in May.
17th is what?
May 17th, thank you.
I've written here.
That's Norwegian Independence Day, by the way.
There we go. that's when the board will vote. I hope at this meeting on the 12th that we're able to get some other higher profile spokespersons from the community to come in and speak against this.
But again, the first one coming up is this coming Thursday.
This coming Thursday at 3 p.m.
All right.
You know, and it's a community issue. You know, I mean, we can't go into, we don't have any time left, but public education's under assault and there's a big attempt to corporatize it and privatize it. And it's very important that people in the community speak up and make a statement about how important this institution is in our city.
All right. Well, we actually still have about 2 minutes left. So are there any, in addition to the meetings coming up, are there any other ways that people who perhaps can't make it to the meeting can weigh in?
I believe written comments can be submitted, and they will be part of the record.
Okay.
So it's important just to, you know, make some comments. I would also urge listeners to contact their local media outlets and ask them to cover the issue.
Yeah, absolutely. Look for the coverage in the media, New City Collegian, or Seattle Times or other. Go to seattlecolleges.edu website. It'll take a little navigation. The official email address to respond to this is vco@seattlecolleges.edu, and that's the Vice Chancellor's office. And I would, it'd be great if they were deluged with comments. vco@seattlecolleges.edu.
Very good. Well, with that, we are unfortunately out of time. I want to thank you both for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.